The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
I want to welcome my next guest. He was a Premier League and Championship footballer in England, playing for the likes of Blackburn Rovers and Preston and Burnley and Stockport. Made his international debut with the Republic of Ireland under Trapattoni in 2011. And all of these accolades we will talk about, but there's another subplot to the story which we're going to discuss now. Keith Tracy, good morning. Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to be here, Ryan.
And tell us a bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? And when did the interest in football and soccer come into your head?
I grew up in the flats in Sherry Street, Philchanahan Flats, all them years ago now, 30 years ago. I started getting the interest from clubs at about 13, was my first offer to go away.
Yep.
That was from Celtic, to go up to Scotland.
Yeah.
But we decided at the time that was a bit too young. We wanted to do the junior cert at least, so me and my family done the junior cert and packed up and went to Blackburn at 15.
Smart decision by the family, get the junior cert under the belt.
You say smart, you know, in the long run it didn't really make that much of a difference.
Yeah,
well, 13, 15, I think it was all too young either way, so we still went a bit too young in hindsight.
The day before you went away, you had a bit of a shindig, is that right?
Yeah,
unofficial shindig.
Yeah, it was the done thing at the time, you know, all the other players that were leaving would would have a going away party. So I had a going away party down in Coles down in Fairview.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get a couple of quid for your back pocket to keep you going till your first payday, so we swiftly ended up down in the off-licence and over in the park having our own little party, and that was my first run in with alcohol, yeah.
And when you got across to the UK at 15, it's really young. I mean, if I think of, you know, my own who's nearly 15, but it just think, crikey, I've been doing well to let her go into town, let alone cross the river,
yeah,
the water.
But, you know, at the same time, I wanted it so badly that, you know, I was, you know, pushing my mother and father to let me go. But, you know, I have a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old,
yeah,
and a 10-month-old at home. So, you know, my oldest was only 5 years off going to England. So when you put it into that, it really does bring it home how young I was. So, yeah, it's slightly worrying.
And how was it over there for the initial few months? Were you homesick?
The first couple of months, I cried myself to sleep for probably 2 weeks because, you know, the place I was staying in was at Diggs, and the place was like Emmerdale Farm for anybody who's ever been to Blackburn, you know. So that was really... The reason I signed there was because my mother and father said, listen, you won't be able to get in trouble here. And, you know, in the long run, I proved them wrong. So it didn't work out great, but... You know, we didn't really know what we were getting into at the time.
And did you all live in the same house, or how did that work? Because you were...
There was 32 players in 16 rooms in the Digs. That was just off the pitches. So we had Mick and Mary, who were the house parents. But, you know, like I said, there was 32 players there. So it was quite easy to slip out the back door and, you know, not be noticed for a while.
And did you just slip out the back door?
It wasn't just me. It was a couple of us. Yeah,
yeah,
but I was the instigator.
I was the instigator.
Yeah, well, you know, I think... drinking my life growing up was always very loose, so, you know, I had a very loose association with drink. I didn't see it as a drug or anything that could really impact me physically or mentally, but, you know, obviously my eyes were open at the time, or later in the time.
Of course, and you slipped out, and where would you go to in Emmerdale Farm?
I'd either find Blackburn City Centre, but then, you know, you start to get noticed in there, so I'd end up in Preston, and then you start to get noticed there, so I end up in Blackpool, and, you know, Blackpool never really closes, you know, it's like the Vegas of England, so... Yeah, there was always somewhere for me to find where I wouldn't get noticed. So I'd slip out anywhere, Manchester, Liverpool. You'd really be able to go wherever you liked.
And were you having a few pints, or were you getting proper locked? Like, what was the...
It would start, you know, when I was 15, 16, it was a few pints, but, you know, way more than I should have been having. Obviously not even drinking, old enough to drink. But as I got older, it would literally be, you know, drinking to pass out. You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it wasn't healthy at all.
So how did you marry your football career? Because you want to be athletic, fit, running around the pitch, scoring goals, whatever. You were at a very high level.
Yeah.
How did you function on both levels then?
It was quite easy, I think, because you're so young and so fit at the time, you can sort of get away with it. You know, you're only training. You know, a typical footballer's day would be in the building for 10. You'd be home for 1 o'clock if you wanted to be, if you were pushed to get out. So, you know, at 19, 20, being super fit, you could hide the fact that you've had a couple of points the night before and, you know, do your running, do your work. Or you could even just throw in a back injury, a hamstring tear, and go in with the physios for the day, and you wouldn't even have to see the managers, because the managers don't really want to interact with you while you're injured.
So you could kind of play the system a bit.
Yeah, you can play Casper the Friendly Ghost. You know, nobody's going to find you around the training ground if you don't want them to. So, you know, I'm sure it probably still goes on today where people are playing hide and seek around the training grounds and they just get away with it.
Where were you going at night then to, in terms of, was it pubs or clubs? Because as your profile rose, what sort of clubs were you playing for then?
Well, it would have been Blackburn. I was at Blackburn for the first 7 years. That's where the alcoholism probably really bedded into me. And, you know, when I went over at 15. By the time I was 17, I was on my third contract already. Because we had had three different managers in the club. So one came in, was impressed, gave him a new deal. Another one came in, was impressed, gave him a new deal. So at 17, I had bought my first house, had a Range Rover outside. I didn't even have a licence at the time. And it was just mental. It was, you know, nobody really seemed to want to say no to me because my career was on an upward curve. So no matter how much I drank or, you know, the silly things I asked for, they seemed to always turn up.
What silly things?
Well, a Range Rover at 17 with no licence.
That's a start.
Yeah, that was it. And, you know, like, I obviously had run-ins with the police over there at the time because I was driving, you know, never drunk driving, but, you know, driving without a licence is, you know, pretty stupid at the best of times.
For sure. Let's move on to happier stories. When you got the call, not from Giovanni Trapattoni, whose English was so rotten that he wouldn't be making calls to anyone via his own family, but his assistant manager, Marco Tardelli, called you to say what?
He called me to say that I was selected for the Argentina squad when the Aviva opened. It was the first game, but yeah, I thought it was a prank phone call, to be honest with you. It was that, you know, you get this, I don't want to say dodgy, because his English wasn't bad, Marcos, but it was, you know, it sounded like somebody taking a mic from Dublin, to be honest with you.
Because they had a bit of Dublin in it.
That's
too.
It, yeah. I have a lot of dodgy friends back in Dublin, so I wasn't too sure whether I was getting wound up or not. So, yeah, in the end, you know, Sean St. Ledger gave us a call and let me know that it was real.
How did it feel?
It was great. It was nice to tick the box, and that was the one thing, playing in the Premiership and playing for my country was the two things I really wanted to do, so yeah, it was nice to tick that box.
The first ever game at the new Aviva Stadium, as it was.
Yeah.
That was a little bit of history.
Yeah, it's a good little quiz question, isn't it?
Isn't it? Can you remember who you played against?
Argentina.
Correct answer. Yeah. 2 points. When you got into then the Irish squad, and did you feel elevated then? Had you moved a gear, or were you still boozing at this point?
I was still boozing, yeah, but actually the first time I went into the hotel, I tried to model my game on Damien Duffy's. I know this isn't a sports show, but, Duffy was a left winger, you know, and
sure.
I tried to model my game on him, but as I got there, everybody gets their own rooms, and security fella was there, and he said, "Oh, Keith, you're in room 300. So I went down, went into the room, and I seen a pair of boots on the floor, and I think, look, I'm supposed to be in a room by myself here, and lo and behold, Duffer comes out of the shower with a towel around his head and didn't even know he was sitting there. So that was it. That was how I got to meet me oil Duffer in the nip in the first 2 minutes. So
how did that feel? Now, don't mind the nip thing. That's just unfortunate, a moment in your life. But the fact that here was this mentor and idol of yours sharing a room with you.
Oh, you know, he kicked me out.
Oh,
he said, "Yeah, this is my room. You're in a different one."
Oh, I thought you were in a twin.
Out, yeah, but no, he wasn't being mean. I think Duffer just had his little routines. He liked to stay in a certain room and this and that. And he was treading on his toes at the time, so I was quickly moved on.
You were still boozing at this point, or drinking?
Yeah, still quite heavy at the time. Yeah.
What would a binge be for you at that point?
Like I said, I'd start off on pints, but you know, I'd quickly be moving to whiskey, vodka. You know, the normal things that you would associate with people having a problem.
And then at one point you obviously decided this is bad. Did somebody tell you you had a problem, or did you realise you had it?
Every club I was ever at, it was really an issue. You know, I'd either be fined or I'd be missing days, and most of the clubs knew there was a problem, but yeah, there was one or two people that tried to send me to not AA, but you know, the football equivalent. There's Tony Adams runs a Spartan Chance thing down in London. I was offered to go to that a few times, but you know, at the time, you're in this bubble that, you know, you're earning thousands a week. You know, people are loving you. You're signing autographs left, right and centre. And in my head, I was only having a couple of points here and there. Yeah. And I was still performing at such a high level that there wasn't really a problem.
Yeah,
in my head at the time.
You were functioning,
you know,
so well. You thought, I don't need to be going down there.
Yeah, well, how can you? Like, when looking from the outside in, you would never. They're not the characteristics of an alcoholic, you know. So it was quite difficult to believe I was an alcoholic at the time.
How did you end up moving back to Ireland and playing with the likes of Drogheda and St. Pat's?
We had a game on Boxing Day. I was playing for Barnsley against Preston, and I was allowed to stay in my own house because it was so close to the stadium. I woke up on Boxing Day morning and there was sick blood, everything all over me sitting room floor. I had a few drinks the night before, which obviously I shouldn't have done at a game sure. the next day. But yeah, the taxi driver came in to drop me to Deepdale, and yeah, there was blood all over the ground, all over the sofas, in the toilet. It just wasn't right. And even the taxi driver at the time was, you know, should I ring your mother and father? Should I get them over? Should I ring your wife? And, you know, I was just swept under the carpet. I went to play the game. I was put on the bench, thank God, and I quickly made an excuse that I had the flu. I went to do a sprint in the warm-up, and everything just kept coming black and black and black, to eventually I couldn't even see people in the stand. So I made up some excuse that I had a flu or something, and the gaffer said, listen, don't worry about it. And I didn't even stay for the game. I rang my wife, jumped on a flight and went home.
And was that the realisation then, it was time to fix this?
That was, looking back, it probably was the time, but there was still another probably 2 years of heavy drinking to
was
come
there,
from that.
Yeah,
although it was a wake-up call, I still wasn't quite ready to give it up just yet.
You were married at this stage?
I was married, yeah, just got married.
And she sounds pretty amazing and extremely patient.
Extremely patient, right, yeah. That's why she's going out with me.
That's what I was wondering. Tell me how you met her. What's her name?
Leanne. Me and Leanne have known each other all our lives. We lived across from each other in Sherry Street.
Really?
Yeah. And I moved to England at 15. I came back for the off summer. I was back in Dublin for 2 months, and she, her and her father owned a shop across the road. So I went in to get some phone credit on the summer, and that was it. A little spark ignited, and I quickly asked her out, and here we are. It's just, 7 years later.
Congratulations! What a great story. And you drank then. You kept going motoring on for 2 years, and who fixed the problem then, or at least what point did you think after those 2 years, I'm out? Sick of it.
To be fair, I think my wife and my therapist really handle it very well, because if somebody had said to me from the start, listen, you're going to be sober, completely sober, I wasn't open to that idea. So I was sort of mollycoddled along to, listen, we're just going to make you a little bit better, you know, knock a little bit of the drinking on the head. And eventually they got me into a mind space, and, you know, I had my 10-month-old son as well. So my life was just starting to turn around and get that little bit better, a little bit easier. I wasn't missing football as much, and like I said, I had Teddy and my wife was there, and, you know, Jerry Ann and Izzy, so it was just time to stop.
It was time. You mentioned you've been in therapy for a long time now, is that right?
Yeah.
How often a week would you go in?
I would go with Evelyn probably twice a week. I haven't seen her now in the last couple of months, because I feel like I've made a bit of progress in it. So, yeah, but I see her all the time walking the dog, so I get a freebie off her every now and then, you know, if I ever need one.
That's quite true. Do you time your walk so you can get a free session?
I do, yeah. About 9 o'clock every night.
Yeah, I was just going to say. You know, it's so good to talk to you as, what age are you, 30? Is that
30 now, yeah.
You know, when to talk to you as a younger man about, you know, therapy and things that, these are conversations that wouldn't have taken place 10 years ago in this country, so publicly. But it's now just not an issue. It's actually considered healthy.
Yeah, well, I think the strongest man in the room is the one who can point out his flaws and try and move forward from them. Not, you know, I was at 15, I tried to sweep everything under the carpet.
Yeah.
I was the strong, silent type, or so I thought. But usually that will wear you down over time, sweeping stuff under the carpet. It really does, eventually, when I did come home, I just unloaded on my wife, on my therapist, on anybody who would listen. And even this now is a form of therapy for me. You know, this is one of the reasons I like to speak about it. And I do think, you know, young fellas going over, it's a minefield mentally. So, you know, I think the message needs to get across. It's not all, you know, rosy in the garden, and it can be quite tough over there.
Yeah. And you need to mind yourself and talk.
Yeah.
That seems to be a big part of it. You don't own a mobile phone, and you have no social media presence.
Mm.
You're 30 years old, and you're a figure of note. That's really strange now, isn't it? I mean, in 2019.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, like I say, with the young kids at home, they want iPads, they want iPhones for Christmas. So trying to practice what you preach, I don't have a phone, so they can never turn around to me and say, oh, Daddy, you're always on your phone. So I don't have a phone, I don't need a phone.
So for us to get in touch with you, we had to speak to you, to find your wife,
you
get her
boss,
number.
Yeah.
we have to call her.
Yeah, I like it that way. You know, it's nobody's pecking me head. I think I'm just a simple man at heart, and I like to be left alone in general. But, you know, things like this, I think it really is important, because there's that many kids just in Sherry Street alone that want to be footballers. So when you take it as the whole of Ireland, how many young kids think it's they want to go on and deal with that. You know, there is little pitfalls there that people just need to watch out for.
For sure.
That's what I'm trying to get across.
And you do it so well. And you know, we talked about what would enhance a school. And I think you talking to a school about your experiences, I'm sure you've done school talks, but you sound like somebody who'd be great at it.
Yeah, well, I've never done that, but I'm really open to that. I think these kids need to hear that. Yeah, I'd love to go around and speak. And, you know, the FAO used to have somebody in a role called Owen Hand who would actually physically go around and speak to people, but Owen is no longer in that role, and as far as I know, nobody has filled it.
You're tailor-made for it.
Well, hopefully, yeah. So Ryan Tuberty's backed me for it. Anyway.
100%.
Yeah,
for what it's worth, but I really mean it. How are you now? You seem like you walked in here and it just felt you don't look troubled. You know, you can smell trouble off somebody if they're not that they're bad trouble, but they seem troubled. You seem. I get the sense that your wife is pretty much is the winner here in terms of for you.
Yeah, she's the one who held it all together. She's like, I wasn't the one who wanted help. But to be honest, I would have probably just kept floating through England, just kept doing what I was doing, and probably would have been in a really bad state at the minute if I'd even been with us all together, you know, which is scary to think, but it did really get that bad, you know, a couple of points in my life, but my wife was the one who, you know, dragged me by the scruff and got me over.
And got you over. And the kids are now, how old did you say?
They're 10 and 9. Izzy just turned 9 the other week, yeah.
Yeah, congratulations. And do you want to play again, or are you playing, or what's the...
I'm back. I've done a bit of training. I actually had an offer to come back playing this season.
Great.
But I had with the drink, you know, my body's a bit wore down, so I'm just literally starting to go through the gears. So next pre-season won't start till January, so I'm going to give myself a couple of months to lose this last bit of puppy fat and just get myself, you know.
And who are you going to play with?
I don't know yet, it's all up in the air just yet.
Oh, so, but you're back in the zone.
I'm back in, yeah, that's training tremendous. Professionally again, and you know, everything's looking good. You know, just to be on the pitch, for me, it's, you know, everything's relative to everybody, and you know, for me to be playing, you know, lots of people say, oh, how is he playing in the Irish League? He shouldn't be playing at this level, I should be higher. But you know, let's get it right. I've had quite a bad scare, and I'm happy just to be here, and to be on a pitch is a huge plus for me at the minute.
Great. You've got your act together, and it's just tremendous. I'm delighted for you and for your family. And I know I've been forcing copies of the RT Guide signed onto my colleagues. They didn't even want them, but your kids would like
them. They do, yeah. They love the toy show. They love you on that.
But tell them I said hello.
Yeah,
and
I will do.
I'll sign that for them straight away. And make sure that they're happy. So you have something to go home with. To say, where's he be? Your story is brilliant, Keith. You tell it so well. And I think that the schools around the country should get in touch with Leanne, obviously.
There's
no point in talking to you because you don't have a phone. And invite you in to talk to them, because it's exactly what the sort of language people need to hear. Good luck with it all.
Brilliant.
And thanks for coming to see us.
Anytime.
Okay.